Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is going to be an empowering hour. For those of you who are just joining us, possibly just recently, or if this is your first program, we are looking for the truth. There is no ideology. There is no politic. There's no cultural, ethnic, religious inferences. We're not here to sell anyone. We're here to see how we can live a longer, healthier, and more peaceful life, living in coexistence with respect and honoring each other. That's what we're about. And we're going to put all that together today. For example, the latest from the University Medical Center in Freiburg, Germany, on how vitamin A is good for your nerve cells. When you think about how many problems we have with our nerves, that's a big deal. And again, it all comes from peer-reviewed literature. Then from Indiana University, a chemical compound in certain essential oils promotes wound healing. Ah, you mean what was called quackery and of no scientific relevance and pseudoscientific for decades? Yes, but there were actually thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature and millions of cases per day of people benefiting from Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, African medicine. All these around the world were real? Yeah, they were. And so we're going to talk about how these oils, essential oils, can help all forms of wounds on your body. I'll tell you which herbs are most powerful in that respect. And again, this is creating a balance where there was no balance, a truth where there were only lies. That's what we do. Exercise can help slow down cognitive decline in some people with Parkinson's disease. And this is from Hallam University in South Korea. And also today, time to shift from food security to nutritional security to increase health and well-being. Who says that? That's a radical concept. Tufts University and Georgetown University. Ah, they finally caught up to where everyone in this audience who's been listening for a while already has been. Good for them. It's never too late to get with it. And also for those of you doing fasting, Max Dubruck Center for Molecular Medicine in Germany says fasting acts as a diet catalyst in those who have metabolic syndrome. Well, that's over 100 million Americans alone, so that's a big deal. Those are just some of the things, but not all we're going to touch on. But then more importantly, to the larger audience, we're going to play a little bit of Naomi Wolf, who has been for decades one of the leading liberal humanists and challenging a lot of social inequities and the greed of the current capitalist model that is being used. By the way, she's on the program for most of the hour tomorrow live. But I want to thank Steve Hilton, who I disagree with on a lot of stuff, for having her on and for her finding that there are a few forms, only a handful, that have an audience. She's been excluded from all the major networks. Mind you, she could go on any television program she wanted for decades. Now they're attacking her. And she has to get in line, take a ticket, along with Chris Hedges, Abby Martin, Max Blumenthal, and Glenn Greenwald, and Matt Taibbi, the best and brightest, the most honest and courageous of our investigative journalists and social commentators, who will not compromise, have no forums left. Well, they have a forum here, and we have more forums for these voices on the Progressive Radio Network than any other place on the planet. And more on that later. But we're also going to play you something that you have never heard before. This is an exclusive. Who is the person? Namon McHenry. Who is he? He's the emeritus professor in the Department of Philosophy, California State University. He's an expert in the philosophy of science, metaphysics, and bioethics. And he's going to talk about why you can't trust evidence-based medicine. You can't just trust automatically what's in a peer-reviewed journal. You cannot trust that what the government is telling you about science is accurate. Whoa, You mean one of the world's preeminent ethicists in science? You don't become emeritus unless you've achieved a lot that is unique. You're going to hear what he has to say. Now, he is on for 10 minutes today, but a full hour next Tuesday night's Progressive Commentary Hour. So we have a lot to share today, plus a commentary, time permitting, on an important issue, and that is the issue of you can't win, don't even try mindset. Well, I'm of the belief that we can win, and we must try mindset. The irony of it is we will both be right. The Corbett newsletter, James Corbett, will be sharing his thoughts. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. And by the way, tonight we have Derek Jensen for the full hour on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock talking about the environment, why we're not awake, why the woke generation is contributing to environmental degradation at a massive pace, why you cannot trust your local governments, your state governments, your federal governments, federal agencies, major corporations, the think tanks, the NGO, to save us because they're part of the problem, not the solution. Well, how do we end up thinking they're the solution? Because we've been indoctrinated to believe that. Starting with health, neuroscientists agree that a person's brain is constantly changing, rewiring itself and adapting to environmental stimuli. This is how humans learn new things and create memories. This adaptability and malleability is called plasticity. Physicians have long suspected that remodeling processes also take place in humans at the contact points between nerve cells, meaning directly at the synapses. Until now, however, such a coordinated adaptation of structure and function could only be demonstrated in animals. Now they've done it with humans. And what is one of the major things that help your nerve cells function and therefore help you with all things involving the nervous system, which is all things in the body? Vitamin A. Occam's razor. Occam, the 14th century mystic and philosopher, used the razor to cut through the fat to get to the center of what you're trying to do. In a more simpler way, it means that the most obvious, simplistic answer is frequently the most accurate. This was published in eLife, the scientific journal. So take your vitamin A. In the experiments, the team investigated whether so-called dendritic spines change when exposed to a vitamin A derivative called retinoic acid. And dendritic spines are the parts of the synapse that receive, process, and transmit signals during communication between neurons. As such, they play a crucial role in brain plasticity and are constantly adapting to everyday experience. For example, learning can change the number and shape of dendritic spines. However, a transformation in the number or shape of the spines is also found in diseases such as depression and dementia. So that's where vitamin A came in, and vitamin A helped that whole process, which means you're going to help with everything involving nerves. And think about ALS, multiple sclerosis. That also it could help. I've been using essential oils my entire adult life. I like the way they smell, but also they're relaxing. And one of the ways that I use them is when I'm doing my writing, and I do extemporaneous writing, for my lectures, I put on an essential oil, a little $50 unit, and it throws out a vapor. You put the oil in and frequently just turn the bottle upside down, this little canister, and then little bit of water in there, it vaporizes and throws it out, and so you can breathe it. Well, now Indiana University reveals that a chemical compound in essential oils can enhance wound healing, especially when applied topically. So the oils that are the most healing for wounds, lavender, rosemary, yang yang, that's Y-L-A-N-G, the L is silent, and black pepper. They contain a compound which is called beta-caryophyllene. And this contributes to improved wound healing, and that's terrific. So now, for those of you who have wounds that should heal, try those essential oils. I also believe that in all assisted living centers, nursing homes, and even in hospitals when people are in recovery, they're going to have wounds, frequently from surgery, and they should be looking at hyperbaric oxygen chambers. In fact, I just saw that this rapper was in critical care and is on life support. Have they thought about putting him into a hyperbaric oxygen chamber? In any case, I believe that in the future, not the far future, for those who are hip, will be looking first, educate yourself what hyperbaric can do, how it works, and how it can benefit you, especially with wounds, with healing, for those of you who are having trouble breathing, and longevity. Oh, and speaking about longevity, I don't have time today, but there's a brand new study from Stanford University that showed that they've been able to reformulate the telomerase. That's the enzyme necessary for creating the telomeres that are the end caps of your chromosomes. And the longer they last, the longer you live. It's that simple. Shorter telomeres, shorter life, with a few exceptions. But exercise, longer telomeres. Plant-based diet, longer telomeres. Juicing, healthy fresh juices, longer telomeres. De-stressing, stress management, meditation, yoga, longer telomeres. Certain nutrients, like L-carnosine and NAD, PQQ, longer telomeres. But now, this could virtually revolutionize adding 1,000 new replications onto cells, which means you could live years longer. And the first one was on the skin, meaning crepey skin, wrinkled skin, saggy skin could all be reversed. More on that on an upcoming program. Also, the team noted the increased gene expression of hair follicle stem cells in the treated tissue. This potentially indicates that there's more to wound healing activity of the beta carotenoline than just activating genes. So that's good news for essential oils. So it's a lot more than the smell. It's a lot more than relaxing you. It's, by the way, curcumin was found to aid in the healing of skin wounds. And that's important too. So, exercise can help slow cognitive decline in many people with Parkinson's. Hallam University in South Korea did that. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. So, one more reason to do your exercise. And a lot of people, when they think of too much exercise, maybe physically they can't do it. So do shorter bursts of exercise, like 3 minutes to 4 minutes at a time, but do it as strenuously as you can without going over a boundary and hurting yourself. And to do that like 4 or 5 times a day, that is better for you than one long, sustained exercise. And finally, in the 1960s, according to Tufts and Georgetown University, a national focus on hunger was essential to address major problems of undernutrition after World War II. In the 1990s, the nation shifted away from hunger towards food security to better capture and address the challenges of food access and affordability. Now, a new Viewpoint article argues that today's health and the challenges call for the U.S. to shift from food security to nutrition security, in order to catalyze appropriate focus and policies on access, not just to food, but to healthier foods. I mean, and the ideas of those who are into food security, like Bill Gates, they want everything industrialized. By the way, he's the largest owner of farmland in the United States. Do you really think he's going to promote organic, sustainable, small patch farming? No. No genetic engineering of seeds? Yes. And then all of us would be eating genetically engineered foods. Does he know what those foods would do? Has he ever read the study that won the Nobel Prize for jumping genes? I doubt it. After all, he's not a college graduate. He has no background in science, no background in medicine, no background in public health, no background in environmental and energy, no background in environmental science. But he's an expert on everything. The most powerful person in the world is, in my opinion, the most diabolically toxic person on the planet, because he actually has the power of sovereign states. Yeah. He's behind everything that I feel is wrong. Well, this was an article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association this week. So it's interesting because that same Journal of the American Medical Association is what I went after decades ago. And the American Medical Association, which publishes it, was found wrong and had to finally acknowledge the field of chiropractic. Before then, before the work that we did, Jolisa and myself, he, separate from me, we both received the same secret documents out of AMA headquarters. Never knew to this day who gave it to us. But there was a secret department working with inside the AMA for 25 years, discouraging, discrediting, and attacking everything involving alternative health. And the largest purveyor of alternative health were the chiropractors. So they were really targeted, and they called it an unscientific cult. It was so bad that in one of the documents, over a million documents under discovery, it was shown that a medical doctor at a country club asked the AMA should he resign from the country club because he found out that another person, a chiropractor, was a member of the same country club. I mean, think of that for a moment. You've conditioned the medical doctors to believe that there is no alternative to cancer, yet there was. It was called crebiosin, and before that, the Hoxie treatment, both legitimate. And they were destroyed. And the reputations of the man who said Ed Nuremberg, he was a lawyer, but he was also the most cited scientist in American history up to that point, Dr. Andrew Ivey, MD, PhD, JD, and yet they destroyed him because he did the actual clinical studies and showed that crebiosin worked. Wow. I did a four-hour special on WMC Radio on Andrew Ivey, crebiosin, and I'm going to find that because I'm going to play that one night. In fact, ask Sharon, Jesse, to put it on her notes. She's our archivist for the last 30 years. Sharon takes care of all the archive articles and shows. Find me, if you would please, the crebiosin special, Herbert Bailey. I remember all the people I had on. Went 4 hours. In any case, people should know that all along there have been these dirty tricks, the cancel culture, known by other names, attacking anything in the alternative field. And so if you said something worked, like ginseng, no, it doesn't, it's quackery. And behind that was Journal of the American Medical Association. Well, they should have read The Art of War. They would have seen that as powerful, all-encompassing in their power, they had weaknesses, and they lost. And they had to officially acknowledge that chiropractic was a legitimate scientific healing process. But now they're saying that we should look at nutrition. Good for you. 60 years late, but good. I'm glad you're finally where everyone in this audience has been all along. How many times have you heard me say that we are a nation that's overfed and undernourished? So the fact that someone wants to put food on our table doesn't mean it's healthy food. If that were the case, how many ads would be left on television? The orange juice one would. That's healthy. But what about all the food that's commonly served? That causes disease, and everyone's known it all along. So now they're saying, let's grow healthy food. Well, how about doing this? How about putting some of the money from the bailout into de-ghettoizing every ghetto and community in the United States that is economically deprived, no jobs as such, and bring up the standard of their life by having urban gardening, bring back organic gardens, put them in every single community, every couple blocks, so everybody has healthy food to eat. Oh, and by the way, it wouldn't hurt if you, and I even volunteered to do this myself in Newark. True story. And I did it in, first it was in Camden, New Jersey, where I asked the top political leader, I said, can you donate a block to me? The most run-down, gutted, nobody lives there block. Bulldoze it down so it's just dirt. And I'll go in there and build a model. In one block, I'll put in a clinic to help people with their illnesses, diabetes and high blood pressure and obesity, the disease that are killing people, put in a mental health clinic to help people who are going through problems, put in a clinic to help people get off drugs and clean their body up, have a big brother, big sister, a clinic where people who have no good, they don't have parents or have one parent who's struggling, now you have a big brother, big sister to be with you each day, to give you love, guidance, and the understanding of life in a good way. Put in a school that would help people with crafts. They could learn all kinds of usable talents. Put in a gym, swimming, basketball, and put in a garden that could feed the whole community. I volunteered to do that. They turned me down. That's how corrupt politics can become, or indifferent, if it's not corrupt, or insensitive to the real needs. That's part of that, well, you're just one person, what can you do? You think? Yeah, you're right. I'm just one person. Now, go to GaryNall.com, go to the video bios, and I'll show you what I can do, and still doing. So you're right if you say I can't do it, because you don't believe it, and I'm right if I say I can do it. So we need more of that. We need more people in this audience to stand up, join together, go to a place and say, let us be the solution. And then ask them. And finally, fasting acts in ways that can help rebalance your metabolism. Now, a lot of people, that's a hard thing to understand. You got high blood pressure, you have abnormal lipid and carbohydrate metabolism, you're diabetic, you're overweight, you're fatigued, you have pain. Well, what if you ended your last meal at 6 o'clock at night and you didn't have your next meal until 9 o'clock in the morning? That gives you enough time to help correct your metabolism through modified fasting. Something to think about. We are 23 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. When we come back from our break, we're going to go to this gentleman that I mentioned. Again, his name is Lemon McHenry, M-C-H-E-N-R-Y, Emeritus Professor in the Department of Philosophy, California State University, and he does research in the science of metaphysics, bioethics, and the science itself. And he's very concerned about the evidence-based medicine that the people try to shove down our throat. Look at the science. Everybody should be vaccinated. Can you show me the science? I've looked. I don't see that. I see a lot of people shouldn't be. At least 50% of all people vaccinated should never have been vaccinated because, A, there was no symptoms. You didn't test to see whether or not they had actually been exposed to the coronavirus, therefore were immune, or they were healthy and their immune system would fight it off. And you can see the actual science peer-reviewed literature showing that there's a 99.99% chance they will not die. Now, the people who might be most affected and would benefit from a theoretical safe and effective vaccine, because, again, there's no science yet, and it will take at least a minimum of 12 to 24 months to see if it's safe or effective. So anything made before then is propaganda. And so what about all the people with autoimmune conditions who should not get the vaccine? It could trigger and has danger. So what about that? So you see, what we're doing is we've weaponized selective science and selective journals. I'll give you one example because it leads into what he's saying. Both the New England Journal of Medicine and The Lancet, two of the most respected medical journals in the world, both published fraudulent papers on the lack of science supporting the safety or efficacy of hydroxychloroquine. They were wrong. They were fraudulent. They had to retract them. Okay. But what about all the news media that continue to talk about it as if it were still real? Then they are part of the problem. And that's a danger. They're lying to you. So that's what the people are not being told and should be reminded of that. And so there's an awful lot now that we have to pay attention to. And until we do, we're going to be making wrong choices. How wrong is it? Well, read the medical doctor and the director of diagnostic laboratory presents successful treatments for COVID and exposes the danger of the COVID vaccine. I want to thank Brian Shihavy of Health Impact News for pulling this up. This is a Dr. Ryan Cole, C-O-L-E. He's the CEO and medical director of Cole Diagnostics, one of the largest independent laboratories in the state of Idaho. He is also a Mayo Clinic-trained board-certified pathologist. He is board-certified in several different areas of pathology, including clinical pathology. He is also expert in immunology and virology. And he is, get this, he has seen over 350,000 patients in his career. He's done over 100,000 COVID tests in the past year. And Dr. Cole begins by showing statistics in this lecture he gave that prove Idaho is no longer in a pandemic, but an endemic. He states that the highest risk factors for contracting COVID are advanced age, obesity, and low vitamin D levels. He is correct. He also explains that coronaviruses have historically always followed a 6 to 9 month life cycle. So the people telling it's going to be forever and you've got to wear your mask forever and wear two masks forever and social distance and on top of getting your vaccines, two vaccines now, but it could be you might have to get them every single month. And he gives us previous examples like SARS-1 and MERS. And it's interesting because he statistically shows that the average annual age of death is 78.6 years and the average age of death during COVID is 78.6 years. So people are dying at the time they would die, but they're dying with COVID, not necessarily from COVID. He is adamant that proper levels of vitamin D are essential to fight coronavirus. He says, quote, there is no such thing as a flu or cold season, only low vitamin D season. Wow, that is terrific he said that. He goes on to explain that by law, the government cannot, listen carefully, everyone, the government cannot use experimental vaccines on the population if there are already effective treatments. So all the current experimental COVID vaccines, which Dr. Cole himself admits do not meet the legal definition of a vaccine to begin with, are all illegal because they are therapies such as vitamin D that are effective in treating COVID patients, as well as older, already FDA-approved drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and there are about four others. Interesting. Have you heard about him? Nope. Did you know he existed? Nope. There are tens of thousands of people just like him. And by the way, here's the latest statistics as of this morning. How many people have died in Europe after getting the vaccine? 4,576. How many in the United States? 2,249. In the United Kingdom, 713. In Canada, 24. Well, that's 7,562 who have died, not including China, South America, India, etc. Now, that's generally only 1% of the people who have actually died. That's based upon the best statistics of how many people are reported from a death versus how many actually died from that. So if you were to take 7,562 and multiply that times 100, you end up with a figure of 756,000. Well, that's a whole lot of people. That's 750,000 people who have died, and far more than that with injuries. Now, would we allow any drug at all, in the history of medicine, to be put before the public if you had a minimal of 7,562 deaths? The answer is no. So why is this being allowed? Money and politics and power. Back in a moment, and we'll talk about the science that we've been trusting and how utterly, contemptibly corrupt it is. Please stay with us.
Both your article and the book about this concept of the pharma companies buying thousands of issues of the journal, and that's another incentive, right, for the journals to accept these fraudulent papers. Can you describe that?
So that's another way in which the medical journals have become enormously dependent upon the revenue from the pharmaceutical industry. you have to realize that a clinical trial on a blockbuster drug published in a top medical journal with the branding of a key opinion leader and that key opinion leader's university affiliation is worth an enormous amount of money in terms of confidence. Let's say, for example, they want to buy 1 million copies of these reprints because it's a blockbuster drug, and the sales reps are now going to go distribute the reprints of this journal article. So now the journal is obviously going to become enormously rich on the basis of the reprint sales of the journal article. And also today, there's another phenomenon where journal articles have open access, and that's replacing the model of the reprint issue, but it's the pharmaceutical industry that's paying for the open access.
Did you participate in the Vioxx stuff, or you just studied it for your paper?
This is not a case I worked on, so I don't know in a lot of detail, but I can speak briefly about the fact that there were problems that they knew about when they were conducting their clinical trials with regard to stroke and heart attack. And in this one particular case, they had a manuscript ghostwritten where they downplayed heart attack cases. And the professor who put his name on this paper was then confronted with the fact that there were patients in this trial that had died of heart attacks and were not, in fact, reported in the paper. And his response to this was, well, I went with the data that Merck gave me. So this, I think, is the essence of the problem that I referred to before, where you've got a lead author on a paper who can't guarantee the content of the paper that's been published in his name. Why is that? Well, it's because the data is owned by the pharmaceutical company, and they release it according to their own interest.
What are adverse events, and how does ghostwriting help hide adverse events?
Well, there are a number of ways in which marketing people will slice and dice the data once it has been sort of analyzed by the statisticians. And that's, you know, a very sort of tricky process of statistics as to how all of this can be manipulated. But the one sort of instance that's discussed in my book, it has to do with coding. And coding is how you describe an adverse event in terms of some particular kind of term. So let's say, for example, in the case of a particular clinical trial for an antidepressant tested on children, you get lots of adverse events, which include suicidal ideation, suicidal gestures, suicidal attempts, or even completed suicides. Now, this became a problem with regard to antidepressants for children because we got a black box warning from the FDA on that eventually. And the paper I'm thinking of in particular, which was Study 329, which is now famous for this particular little tactic, what they did was they coded suicidality or suicidal events as something they called emotional liability. So it was basically hidden in the coding. And emotional liability, nobody even seemed to know what that term even meant. But it basically means anything from crying on the one hand all the way to sort of attempting suicide.
What are the other common ways to manipulate a study that these, you know, these medical communications companies do on behalf of Big Pharma?
We talk about the way in which a clinical trial is from start to finish. You've got the design of the trial, and that might be done by, you know, scientists who are recruited, maybe even the key opinion leaders who are recruited at the very beginning in conjunction with the internal scientists at the pharmaceutical company. Then you have the conduct of the trial, which is typically outsourced to contract research organizations. You know, it's a big, complex effort of the logistics of running the clinical trial and collecting the data. And then you have the reporting of the trial, which is done by the medical communications company in conjunction with the marketing people. So you've got three different phases here. And in my book, what I'm describing with Dr. Girardini is cheating at every different level here. All right, so let's go back to the design. You're asking about how the manipulation can be accomplished from the very beginning in the way in which trials are designed. So there are a number of ways. For example, if you use too high a dose or too low a dose of the drug against complete placebo or a comparator drug, you could rig the trial to sort of get some of the numbers that you want.
To adversely impact a competitor drug, right? I mean, sometimes these trials are done to slander a rival drug.
Exactly. You know, and so in that case, you've got a trial that's being conducted for a marketing purpose right from the very start rather than a genuine scientific purpose because, you know, what they're doing is trying to increase their market share with the other companies by showing a competitor that their drug is more effective or more safe. But getting back to the problem with the design and the fiddling with the dosage, it was a very good example of this again in study 329, where there was a comparator drug called imipramine that was being compared against Paxil and placebo. And they used an enormous high dose of imipramine, which subsequent sort of researchers have called elephant doses, especially for children. And what that did was make the side effect profile of Paxil look better by comparison. Okay, so here these are two examples, right? Both coming from one particular study, 329, of how in the design of the trial, in the coding, and in the dosage, we can get right from the very start a manipulation of the science.
What's the next stage and how can manipulation enter into the picture there?
There's a question here about the conduct of the trial in many cases as to how the data is collected. And if it's being done by a for-profit third party that's at service to the sponsor, namely the pharmaceutical industry, they want to produce results that the sponsor wants. So for right from the start, there's a kind of financial interest in the outcome here. Now, in one particular case that's described in our book, we had an unblinding that occurred in the conduct of the clinical trial. Now, in this particular case, there was a drug called citalopram that was being tested on children. And nine of the participants in the trial became unblinded. Okay, so right from the start, we've got a serious protocol violation here because what we're trying to do is a double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial. They were dispensed the pink commercial tablets by accident instead of the pills, which would been indistinguishable as to placebo and the study drug, which was citalopram in this case. Now, what we discovered again, this is only discovered through the sort of discovery process of litigation where we get access to all of these documents, what we discovered is that the company decided to include eight of those nine unblinded patients in the analysis of the trial, as if they were not unblinded. You've got problems at all stages here of design, conduct, and reporting. And in this case, the conduct and the reporting, there was a clear violation. And again, doctors reading this medical journal article would be completely unaware of this.
Okay, there's more to come, a full hour. And he unfolds how, when you read an article, or let's say that CNN or NBC or ABC or Fox or anyone else reports on an article, how do they know that the article was not ghostwritten? Most are. And that means hiring the top professors at a university and giving them a large amount of money to put their name on an article that they know nothing about, and then promoting that through the idea that this is safe and effective without telling people how many of the people from their corporation or associate universities that they pay sit on an FDA or CDC advisory board that show a show of hands that this should be a scheduled drug or scheduled vaccine, which we know that over 50% of the people sitting on these advisory boards are utterly compromised because there's a conflict of interest. But the media won't ask those questions. So as a result, misinformation is provided to you constantly, all the time. And only later, when a vioxx is found to have killed probably upwards of 500,000 people, low end 70 to 80 million, but a high end more realistic of a higher number, no one is held accountable. Nobody loses their job. And yet nothing changes. So ask yourself this. When it comes to cancer, oncologists in some states are allowed to buy the drug at cost, sell it at retail, including with insurance and copays, to a patient. Does that influence then whether they would choose another therapeutic approach? Well, I know the answer because I've spoken with oncologists who've been honest with me about this. Any time a person can make an extra $1 million a year for no extra effort, by simply buying a product and selling a product that they control whether or not the person is given that product, and especially people who have not benefited from chemotherapy, then that is a corruption of the ethics of science. Even if the person wants to see the patient get well, may have entered medicine based upon a higher ideal. Frequently how medicine works is what will pay the bills. Now, both the Democrats and Republicans in power, no matter who controls the legislature, no matter who controls the White House, pharma controls everything. And that's why you get a snake bite. One person had a recent snake bite. It was over $150,000. Why? What in that whole process cost so much? Why is it spending one night if you just went in and slept in a hospital bed with no treatment, no diagnosis, no medicine, nothing? It could be over $1,000 or higher. It's because everyone refuses to take the profit out of medicine and health care. Now, you could leave some profit that makes it reasonable, the same profit a person who owns a haberdasher, clothing store, same profit that a person, let's say, owning a barbershop or a food store. But they don't want that. They want as much as they can exploit. And if you can't afford it, then you go bankrupt or you don't get treated. And why don't we have universal health care? Hey, why don't we have universal health care today? The Democrats control everything. They control the media. They control the deep state in partnership with the deep state. They control the White House, the Senate, the House of Representatives. Why don't they have it as their number one agenda? Because there is nothing more pressing today than people being sick and can't afford the treatment. And that's not even asking the question, are we getting the best treatment? The answer is unequivocally no. We're getting some of the worst treatment in the world. The exception is, and we must note this, I really respect emergency medicine. It is the best in the world. Chronic care medicine, the worst in all of the approximately 39 to 40 developed nations. Now, how can we have more hospitals, more nurses, more doctors, more medicines, more procedures, more mechanical devices, and we be last? Because we didn't ask whether or not it would benefit the patient. We asked, will it benefit the manufacturer, the distributors, the advertisers? So the only person that's not in the equation is the patient. If you should benefit, fine. If not, there'll be another patient taking your place and frequently going broke. A friend of mine had a stomach ache, went to an emergency room. They didn't do anything for him. They charged him $10,000. $10,000. And he had to pay it. All right? So then we say, well, let Medicare and Medicaid, be our protection. No. Let a doctor with ethics and those who own hospitals with ethics. but ethics can't come into the equation. This is something I'd like for you to call in and give me your thoughts on. This is from MIT Technology Review, Stephen S. Hall. Quote, a doctor and medical ethicist argues life after 75 is not worth living. Quote from Ezekiel Emanuel. By the way, just so you know who he is, he was Barack Obama's right-hand person on all medicine. He was the architect of Obamacare, that massive disaster that really benefited insurance companies who wrote it and medical companies, hospital associations, and pharmaceutical companies that supported it. And wasn't it that Nancy Pelosi says, well, we won't know what's in the bill till we read it? Have you ever heard anything more insane than that? That is the height of narcissistic hubris. So Ezekiel says this, quote, whether our consumption is worth our contribution in old age. I see. So if we're in old age and your mind 75 or older, we should be allowed to die, given no input because we're not a value in our contribution compared to what we're consuming. Did it ever occur to you that the medical models you're using are not working? That's not a rhetorical statement. I've cured people with AIDS. It's documented. It is there. You can go and watch the information by independent researchers, physicians, journalists, patients for yourself. Go to GaryNall.com and watch, or also on PRN, and watch The Cost of Denial. 1,200 people kept alive for 15 years. Not one died. They were all healthy. No opportunistic infections, but they were all near death when they came in. And 18 of them seroconverted, no more HIV positive negative. Why wasn't that headline news? Why weren't people coming? We invited them. We did press conferences. That's the danger when the medical model you're using is flawed. Chemotherapy is flawed. Radiation is flawed. Cancer is flawed. If you doubt me, look at the last. I did the analysis on this. This is death by medicine. More people this year will die of cancer than last year. And yet we'll use more drugs, more chemotherapy, more surgery, more radiation. Well, we've been doing this for over 45 years. Now, if you look at the death statistics for this over the last 45 years, and if we average 500,000 per year, and it will be more in some years and less in other years, then you come up with what amount? How many people then in 45 years times 500,000 people have died from cancer? 22,500,000. All right? Well, wouldn't you say if 22 million people are using religiously exactly what the doctor tells them and you have 22 million dead patients, shouldn't someone, one person in all of oncology say maybe it's not we who are wrong, it's the model we're following that's wrong, but it's a profitable model. So the doctor doesn't have much say-so. Everyone who controls how you are treated. So what do you think of that? Do you believe that, like, one of the most powerful men in the world in medicine, Ezekiel Emanuel, he's the chair of the University of Pennsylvania's Department of Medical Ethics. You're the head of an, to me personally, having you make a statement of whether, quote, our consumption is worth our contribution, end quote, and argues that life after 75 is not worth living? That's absurd. That is the height of medical decadence at the intellectual level. I would erase the term ethics from the University of Pennsylvania's department until they get it right when it comes to ethics. Those are my personal feelings. What are yours? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm going to hold my tape I was going to play you of Naomi Wolf because she'll be here tomorrow live in the studio. So give us a call right now. I'd like to hear what you have to say. These are the kind of people, the elitists. And by the way, his brother was Ron Emanuel, chief of staff of Obama, Barack Obama, and behind so many bad things, including the bombing in Libya, and then went on to be the disastrous mayor of Chicago. And what has happened with all the trillions of dollars that have been spent in cities that have had problems? What has changed for the better? Show me a city that's changed. Show me the legislators that are willing to risk their jobs by going on strike until something is actually done to help someone somewhere with something. But maybe I'm missing it. And this is why people come to a progressive radio program. And by the way, there's no progressives that I can find in the U.S. Senate or House of Representatives, or certainly not the White House. You have corporate Democrats or corporate Republicans, and they're supporting corporate agendas, and they're all into hegemony, power, and what the power gives them. I see the same thing in the legislators who make promises, and with rare exception, Tulsi Gabbard was one of those exceptions. There are a few exceptions. But real progressivism, let me share a few of these progressive views and see what has been done with these. In fact, before I give my thoughts, we have Peter from Tampa on the line. Let's go over and say hello to Peter. Peter, hi, your turn.
Hi. You know, you don't know the answer to the questions you're not asking. You don't even know the questions. Now, I'd like to say that's Lao Tzu, but that's me summarizing what you were just talking about. You know, it's all the same thing. And you know what made me think of you? It's like I counted up. It's 28 months now that I stopped taking my MS medication. I was taking it. I said, let's see what I told you about this 2 years ago. I said, what will happen if I don't take this medication? Well, now it's 28 months. I'm fine. What medical journal is that going to be in? It's not going to be in any medical journal. The doctor I was going to isn't even calling me. He doesn't even have it in his records. Peter stopped coming. What's happening with him? He's not wondering. He's not asking the question. So it's not written down anywhere. You don't know the answer to the questions you're not asking. You know what I'm saying, don't you?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. Thank you very much, Peter, for calling in. Reminding us that, by the way, reminding people, I'm a part of Pacifica for 45 years on WBAI, 36 years on PFW in Washington, and 33 years, my good friend Roy Tuckman on KPFK in Los Angeles. I quit two of those stations because of its politics and what I consider just bad broadcasting principles and management. Pacifica is in turmoil. They're groups fighting for control. The bylaws are a disaster. However, the people who want to rewrite the bylaws also are the ones most interested in selling off WBAI. In order for that not to happen, there's going to be, coming up in June, there's going to be a vote on a referendum to give these people the power, in which case there's going to be a tremendous purge, and the likelihood is they will sell the station. If you don't want to see that happen, tomorrow is the final day where you can become a member of WBAI. And therefore, vote your vote of conscience on what you want to see happen to the station. I want to see the station survive. I've already seen coups, and I saw one coup that was not acknowledged because the people engineering the coup were the people who are in power, even to this day, and another coup in 2020 where they locked out the station. They actually went off the air and lost a lot of their listeners. So if you want to stop seeing coups and takeovers have some semblance of local control in programming and management and listenership, then vote. And you can only vote if you register. So do that. Let's go, and by the way, to our BA audience, we're going to say goodbye, but we're going to the top of the hour because our lines are lighting up here, and I want to hear what you have to say. So BAI listeners, please vote by registering. It's only $25. You know, sign up, register as a member of BAI. Then you're eligible to vote. Let me see. Everything just went down just now when I went to go there. Okay. I don't have that. I had it, and then it was gone. Do we have? Who do we have? Hi, Justin from Long Island. You're on.
Hello, it's Josh.
Hi. Your turn.
Oh, hi, Gary. I'd like to probably say I just became a member of WBAI, big part to you and Leonard Lopate. I called in when you were looking for calls about, you know, death by medicine, and I was hoping to share my story.
Please do.
Well, I'm still alive, but my mom, who had cancer, but she was doing okay, they addicted her to opioids. And one day, the opioids were running low, and she panicked, and they took her away to hospice, where they gave her intravenous morphine. They completely inebriated her. She couldn't take in food or fluids. I had to beg them to give her intravenous fluid, and they didn't want to do it because they said, this is where people come to die. We don't assist them in living any longer. And they finally, after I begged and begged and begged them, gave her fluid. And then a week later, I was visiting her every day. She was unconscious. And a week later, they call me and say, her breathing, they're going to administer a drug to help control her breathing. And I was like, I didn't know what they meant. I'm not a doctor. And they administered a drug that stopped her breathing, and she passed.
That is, in my opinion, that is what Emmanuel was talking about. Why waste drugs? Why waste medical treatment? Why waste anything on someone when they're above 75 because they have no quality of life? Well, why don't you talk with the millions, tens of millions of people above 75 who are happy, have more meaning to their life than they did when they were younger because they're free of the constraints and social obligations and family obligations and other obligations.
That's right. That's exactly what my mom would say. That's what my mom used to say. She said, why did this have to happen to me when I'm finally, free to enjoy life? And she was done working and she finally was enjoying life. And, the doctors tell her she has cancer, and then they treat her. And the funny thing is, too, she passed in 2017, and she nearly passed in 2015 because, again, they gave her the morphine. They told her, go home and die, and she withered to become a skeleton. And one day I had her out at the beach, and we were in the sun, and she had a revelation where she said, no, I'm not going to die. She stopped taking the Oxycontin and the morphine, and she completely came back to life. And then she made the choice to go back into treatment, which is also what a scandal the treatment is. They call it a cocktail of chemotherapy where they add a steroid. So it fooled her into every time she would get her treatment, she'd come home and feel like Superwoman and feel like the medicine is making her super strong and healthy again. And it was because she was high on steroids and was able to do landscaping and do gardening. I mean, that was great, but it's such a deception.
How often do you listen to this radio program?
Oh, I've been listening for over 10 years. I actually came and had dinner with you once in the city and at your next door to your health food store. Thanks to actually the guy who passed recently, Bill. What's his name? Bill Thompson.
Thompson.
I actually had the opportunity to speak to him because I was trying to get a ticket to your charity dinner, and I just picked his name off the directory, and I had a wonderful conversation with him, and it was a pleasure just to know him from one conversation. He seemed like a very great man.
He was. He was a unique man. It was about a week and a half ago that I asked at the beginning of the show, anyone who had cancer who was terminally ill, and reversed it completely on my protocol to call. We were flooded. I took three calls, and all the people are cancer-free, one for over 20 years. I have a lot of people who are alive who are terminal, and not once does the cancer establishment call me in and say, Gary, we're here to challenge you. Prove to us that you have a way of approaching cancer that we should pay attention to. In which case I'd be happy to lay out protocols and show them and introduce them to the people. But they won't dare do that because Fritz Perl said a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So what you don't want to do, what you don't want to change, what paradigms you don't want to involve yourself getting out of or being thrown out of, you don't ask the questions that would give you the answers to make the changes, similar to what our earlier guest said. That's what's important. So until such time that there is an open-mindedness, until there's such a time where doctors really get back to what doctors are supposed to do and honor first, do no harm, then we will have people doing what they did to your mother and over 450,000 other people this year. Now, keep in mind, just think of this for a moment. Every single year, over 500,000 people die from cancer who only used orthodox techniques. only. And those who try alternative therapies, and generally they come to me and they're dead. I mean, they have, I've had people, I actually had a person show up, an ambulance brought him over, and they wheeled this person up to the second floor of the Tri-State Healing Center. Never will forget this. And the medical staff looked and said, what are we supposed to do? I said, well, we're supposed to help them. And so that person was near death. They were going into hospice care. Their body had been ravaged by cancer, but then chemotherapy was shutting down their liver and their kidneys. And yet, over a period of months, we got that person well, completely well. Did anyone even, and they went back to their former oncologist. And then the answer was, we might have made a mistake in diagnosis or something. Think of that. Think of the capacity to deny truth when you can't control the outcome of it. That would have meant they would have had to change. You mean there's something out there that was able to succeed where we failed? Yeah, yeah. And we present with humility. We don't brag about these things. You know, and yet these people brag about their successes, and I see nothing but massive failures. And also they play a game, statistical game. Let's say you had breast cancer and you take their therapy and you don't die. They give 100% of the credit to the protocol instead of what a person might have been doing that could have helped reverse their immune system and stimulate natural killer cells. That's the society we live in. And as long as you stay on their grid, you are then a part of their, you're part of their control. And that's why the vaccine passport is so dangerous. Once you volunteer for that vaccine, which is your right to, and you get that card, everything in your life is going to change. But also, if you don't get the vaccine now, and I'm going to deal with this tomorrow, Klaus Schwab is saying that if you don't get a vaccine, you're a danger to society, says the man who was a part, well, I'm going to save what we found out about his background for tomorrow's show. He will not be held in the same esteem by this audience as he is by the World Economic Forum, Davos, the Council on Foreign Relations, and all the other people who live each day for the power they can accede to instead of the truth that they should embrace. Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. More to come. Have a nice day, everyone.